Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, I need to wish everyone a happy summer. Of course, it's not really summer yet till June 20th or so, but it really is summer because unofficially summer starts, of course, on Memorial Day. So I want to share what is one of my favorite essays written by Bob Green that we do every year because it's a good way to start the summer season. It's entitled, Summer Shines as Ever, It's We Who Have Changed. Bob writes, keep an eye on summer. That bit of lyric from the middle of an old song I have otherwise long forgotten reinsinuates itself into the atmosphere this time every year. It might as well be playing on every corner, although it's really not there. It might as well be emblazoned against the clouds like skywriting coming in soft white plumes from a sputtering biplane, although there are no words in the afternoon air. Memorial Day has come and gone. June is here. July and August are on its way. Keep an eye on summer. Yet, we seldom do. Summer is life's greatest gift to us, or at least it ought to be. It's no coincidence that there have been more songs written about summer than about all the other seasons combined. Summertime, wonderful summer, all summer long, a summer song, summer means fun. Whatever your generation, the songwriters and singers of your era were drawn to summer seemingly as if they couldn't help themselves. Summer is everything, at least it once was, when we were young. Then, when summer and life were new, summer represented freedom and friendship and an escape from the grayness of the rest of the year. Summer was not just a season, summer was a reward, even when we hadn't done a thing to earn it. Summer was the time to breathe, to feel like someone else, to discover things about you that could never be discovered in November or February. Summer was the time when you were allowed to figure out who you were. As we grow older, we allow summer to lose that. Summer doesn't change. Unfortunately, we do. The long days and warm nights that we used to cherish and linger over somehow become rushed and diminished because we don't pay proper attention. We have jobs now and responsibilities and deadlines to meet. There are times during the summer when, if someone were to ask us what month it is, we would have to hesitate for a second before figuring out whether it is June or July or August. Summer is a blur, or so we have permitted it to become, the one time of the year that should never be blurred, the one time of the year that should be clear and crisp and distinct. Every summer day is often anything but. It's not summer's fault. It's ours. One of the wisest people I have known once said that the best things in life should be thought of as pebbles in a jar. The assumption should be that the pebbles are finite. Even if you can't count them by looking into the jar, you should assume that one day they will run out. You should withdraw them with care, one by one, never doing it by rote or distractedly. If you withdraw them too rapidly, you are being too greedy and will hasten the day when they are gone. If you hoard them, if you are miserly in keeping them in the jar, then you will rob yourself of the experiences, the good things you should give you. There's no perfect way to do it. The closest you can come to perfection is to know just how precious those pebbles are and to value each and every one. So it is with summers. Here is one true thing. You have one less summer remaining in your life than you did a year ago today. These are the days after Memorial Day. A A year from this morning, you will have one less summer remaining than you do now. That can worry you, or that can thrill you. Choose to let it thrill. Summer is just beginning. Why are we given summers? Well, probably for the reason that we are given all of life's good things, to remind us of what the rest of life does not look like, to show us by contrast what we are missing during all those hours when things are not so fine. If all of life were summer, if all of our experiences were wonderful experiences, then the world would have no texture, no context. Summer, the possibility of summer, summer as we first knew it, is what it is precisely because we are aware its duration is not limitless. It would not taste the way it does if we thought it would last forever. We love it, or at least we once loved it, because we know, even as it is beginning, that it will soon enough be gone. That is why the last evening of summer is one of the most melancholy times of the year. The air is cooler on that September night. The shadows grow longer. There is a sadness on that night that is hard to shake. Not now, though. That's for later. It's the days just after Memorial Day. The pebbles fill summer's jar. Yours to withdraw at your own pace. Keep an eye on summer. Savor every day. Savor every summer night, because summer is life's greatest gift to us, or at least it ought to be. Savor every day. Savor every summer night.
Trees swaying in the summer breeze, showing off their silver leaves as we walked by. Soft kisses on a summer's day, laughing all our cares away, just you and I. Sweet, sleepy warmth of summer nights, gazing at the distant lights in the starry sky. They say that all good things must end someday. Autumn leaves must fall. But don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. When the rain beats against my window pane, I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. They say that all good things must end someday. But don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. And when the rain beats against my window pane, I'll think of summer days again. Dream of you.
A summer song from Chad and Jeremy, and we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Well, we're going to continue a tradition which we've enjoyed for so many years, and I always look forward to this. It's a great way to kick off the summer, certainly the summer season, and we'll kick off with a little special music from a very special guy, Davy Johnston. Thank you.
That's our good pal, Davey Johnson from Chicalba Bagpiping, of course. And if you're familiar with that sound, you're familiar with listening to this every year that we celebrate on the Kevin Moore Show. Illinois' oldest charity, the Chicago Scots, celebrates years of beloved tradition with the 31st Annual Scottish Festival and Highland Games, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th. Experience the best of Scotland without leaving Chicago while benefiting the Chicago Scots' two principal charities, the Scottish Home and the Caledonian House. The largest Scottish cultural organization in North America, the Chicago Scots, is back for the 31st year to provide entertainment and Scottish culture with a modern twist with their annual Scottish Festival and Highland Games, taking place Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Hamilton Lakes, 1 Pierce Place, Itasca, Illinois. The beloved summer celebration, the largest festival of its kind in the Midwest, will feature an extravaganza of activities and attractions from the caber toss to the Highland dance to the dogs of Scotland. Proceeds from the festival benefit Chicago Scots' two principal charities, the Scottish Home, a haven of expert elder care deeply informed by a century of experience, and the new Caledonian House, a unique model of person-centered memory care. This family-friendly event is a chance to explore Scottish culture without having to buy a plane ticket. Enjoy good music, good food, and certainly a great cause. Each year, we invite participants, whether Scottish by birth, by heritage, or simply by inclination, to join us, and each year we are overwhelmed by the response to our festival, said Gus Noble, president of the Chicago Scots. We are excited to continue this event in 2017, highlighting 31 years of Scottish arts and entertainment, athletics, and culinary specialties. And in the studio with us right now is the businessman, entrepreneur, noble Scotsman, direct descendant of the original Scottish patriot, and Braveheart William Wallace, member of the esteemed St. Andrew's Society dedicated to serving the Scottish community, preserving the Scottish heritage, and advancing the Scottish culture, and the president and CEO of the Illinois St. Andrew's Society, now presenting the 31st Annual Scottish Festival and Highland Games, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Hamilton Lakes in Itasca, located at I-290 in Thorndale. Our good pal, Angus Noble. Angus, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Good to see you, Kevin. How are you?
Many years we've been doing this. It's great to have you. It's always great to have you.
It's great to be back. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I was telling, and of course we have Davey Johnson from Chicalba Bagpiping and Sarah Fisick from Heron Associates, one of the great and premier public relations companies in Chicago, headed by Noreen Heron, a good friend of ours, who's now a St. Ignatius mother. We have to add that, of course, being a St. Ignatius father and St. Ignatius. I can't say that. But it's great. It's great to be having you here. And like I said before, it's how we start our summers. It really is. I look forward to this every year. And I look forward to the fact that Davey's improving every year.
We just heard his wonderful version of Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars.
That sounds like it. But things are going well. Now, I know we're going to talk about this, but tell me about the Caledonian House. That's interesting, huh? Because I'm going to need this pretty soon.
We can talk. It's open since we were last here on the show. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we always view this show coming on, and thank you for having us.
It's my pleasure. Such an honor.
A warm and kind thing that you do.
And I thank the Heron Associates for arranging it.
But since we were last here a year ago, we've opened this new building. It's home. I call it a building, but it's so much more than just a house and a structure. It's a place we've invested a lot of time into and a lot of training to provide a unique model of really, in my opinion, the best memory care that you can find anywhere in the area. And what I mean by that is, in a traditional institutional model of memory care, you'd find long corridors and overhead paging and all the institutional things you see, medical carts being pushed along these corridors.
Institutional.
Yeah, right, yeah. We said, let's throw away that rule book when we designed this new Caledonian House. Let's build something that is not home-like, but is actually home. Mm. And so we said there will only be 10 rooms for residents, all built in a round, so that in the middle of the home there is a kitchen that's right there in the heart of the home, not behind those swinging doors that you find in an institution. So when a chicken's roasting or cookies are baking, those smells, which can really evoke memories. It's a very powerful thing, the sense of smell, to bring back memories. they permeate the whole home, and it fills the home with these aromas that are evocative of fond memories and times gone by. Mm-hmm. That's one little thing that we did and designed. We put next to the kitchen a dining room. We put next to the dining room a fireplace and a sitting room. So it really, you walk in and you say, wow, this is somebody's home. But the architectural design was only one part of it. The crucial part of it for me was the operational design. And we took the three functions that are really most important for residents living in elder care. That's food service, housekeeping, and nursing services. Mm-hmm. And we cross-trained our staff to provide all three of those services. And the reason we did that was this creates more meaningful and frequent interaction between the resident and their caregiver. Mm-hmm. And it reduces the sense of discomfort and paranoia that goes along with, well, who's this person? It's a different person coming into my room. Right. And so that sense of familiarity builds trust, it builds comfort and so on. So the operational design of the building, I thought, was very innovative. The third and I think the most important thing we did was we said we must innovate philosophically. And what I mean by that is in traditional models of care or in any traditional business, really, it's the guys in the ties, as I say. The guys are up in the corner offices that mm-hmm. make all the decisions. Mm-hmm. Well, really, we don't know what we're doing when it comes to the comfort of the residents and the daily rhythms and so on. So we employed people who perform all those three functions and also take decisions about daily activities in the home. And this creates a whole new model of care, and we're so proud of it. It opened in August last year, and it's going great guns. All the data that's come back after the post-occupancy analysis shows that residents are beginning to gain weight.
Really? Wow.
They're beginning to be more verbal. They're taking fewer meds. All those tangible things which we can measure. But the most important, and I think the thing that's given me most encouragement in this whole process is the daughter of a resident came to me and said, Gus, you know, I feel like I can sleep again. Mm-hmm. I don't worry. I'm free from the stress of worrying about my mother. Mm-hmm. And I can go into my own personal and professional life and be more present and purposeful. Mm-hmm. And that's the greatest reward we can ever wish
for. Absolutely. How many people are you able to accommodate?
There's 20 bedrooms in this new building. It's very small and purposefully small.
Right, right.
Currently, we're just over halfway filled, which is right on plan to be to reach sustained occupancy by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. But if anybody's interested, we'd be delighted to give them a tour of this new model.
I'm surprised people aren't knocking the doors down. Really.
Yeah, we haven't really gone and advertised in a big way, but we're just about to. With the festival coming up, we'll really be kind of raising the flag and telling people about this. We had the American Association of Architects come for a tour. They recognized it as a new and innovative model. Mm-hmm. We received the British American Business Council's Award for Innovation this year. So people are beginning to pick up that this is a new way of doing it and it's working.
Who is the architect? Who designed it?
We went with a design build firm who are based out of Appleton, Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we did that because I interviewed lots of the firms in the city and they do great work. Mm-hmm. But this firm up in Appleton had recently built something which kind of jibed philosophically and architecturally with what we were trying to do. And I found that sitting across the table from me was a guy called Ben Ganther, and it's Ganther Construction. So Ben is third generation owner of this mm-hmm. company. And their values really matched the Scottish mm-hmm. Homes values mm-hmm. of family and home. And mm-hmm. they've been around 100 years, this mm-hmm. company. And they kind of got us and we got them. And they were great to work with, did a really good job.
I don't think any of our families or any of our lives will not be touched by the unfortunate sickness or illness that Alzheimer's is. But you just never know when you're connecting with those people. And I'll tell you a story. It's a very true story. My grandmother, we lost my grandmother because of Alzheimer's. And, you know, you watch people she just faded away, basically. Yeah. And it was over a couple of years period, you know. And we went to visit her at the nursing home one time, my wife and myself. And we were sitting talking to her. We didn't know if she was listening to us or not, but, you know, you gave it a try anyway. And then my wife and I were talking, and my wife said to my grandmother, who's Italian, because I'm half Italian and half Irish, and my wife said to to Grammy. She said, "Grandma, I'm making some raviolis this weekend. How many eggs do I put in there?" Now, this woman hadn't said anything in months, you know. "How many eggs do I put in there, you know?" She opened her eyes. She said, "Two." And we looked at each other like, what? She might have heard that.
Yeah.
She might have heard that, and she responded.
She will have done.
And that was it. You know, but what you're doing, you never know what you're going to touch. You never know how you're going to affect other people. There's a great saying, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. You're living
that's
that.
That's so true.
You know, you're living that, Gus.
That's
you're
great.
Living that, what you're doing here.
I see this every day, and I know that, you know, our organization represents family. It represents home. From the very first days that this society was formed in 1845, our purpose was to bring something of Scotland to Chicago, mm-hmm. to bring something of home and a sense of family and community. So it makes every sense in the world that we should build something like the Caledonian House, mm-hmm. which is built on those two foundational things of home and family. And I was in the process of training our staff. I mentioned the kind of philosophical innovation. Mm-hmm. Well, we involved our frontline staff in the design of operations and the design of the building. We got them involved right from the architectural planning stage. And as we were in this meeting, I was sitting next to one of our nurse's assistants. And word came down that a lady who'd been a resident of the home for a while had passed away. And I knew that the CNA I was with was very fond of this particular resident, and vice versa, the resident was fond of the CNA. And so I said, I'm really sorry about this news, but Margaret has passed away. And the CNA said, Margaret was a lovely lady, Gus. And then she looked round at me and said, so was her mother. And I took care of her mother when she lived here 30 years ago.
Holy kid.
And I said, hang on, something special about this place where you have such longevity of staff.
Right.
And it's that sense of home and family and commitment mm-hmm. and honor that exactly as you say, that we honor those. And the heartbreaking thing, somebody once at one of our big events, we give an award every year to what we call our distinguished citizen. Mm-hmm. This happens at the Feast of the Haggis, mm-hmm. which is something we do
My
at the
favorite.
End of the year. There we go. Man named Alan Cram, who is the president of the Illinois Institute of Technology, is from the town of Saltcoats in Scotland. And he happened to be talking about, I expected him to talk about his career, what it means to be Scottish, all those values. But he stood there at the microphone and gave the most impassioned speech about living with Alzheimer's that I have ever heard in my life.
Really?
And it was around this one statement that perfectly sums up what you experienced with your nan and what we experience every day at the Scottish Home. Mm. He said, they might not remember us, but we remember them.
Yeah.
And in that statement is a sense that we must honor them despite the ravages of this terrible illness.
Right. We all are who we are because we stand on the shoulders of those who have come before us.
Correct.
And the least we can do and the most we can do is to carry on that tradition and that legacy.
There we go.
And that's why we're having the 31st annual Scottish Games.
There you
right?
go.
How
nice segue.
Isn't that a good segue? Well, let's tell us about that. Now, of course, June 16th and June 17th and Friday and Saturday. It's always on a Friday and Saturday. And then we're doing this for Father's Day because that's
Day.
On the 18th, right?
That's
so
right,
that's a good way to celebrate. Well, what happens on the 16th?
The 16th, we have the games kicks off. And it's really kind of – you'll notice – bagpipers everywhere you go at the Scottish Festival.
At least in the studio.
There we go. We even have a very, very good-looking bagpiper, yeah, Dave Johnson from Chicago Bagpiper.
I don't know about the knees very much, but what are you going to do?
We have more bagpipers this year than we've ever had.
Oh, really?
Last year we had 23 pipe bands at the Scottish Festival and Highland Games. This year we have 32 as of this morning.
Wow.
It goes to show what a great partner in the Midwest Pipe Band Association we have. Jim Sim and his colleagues over there have done a fantastic job.
Now, I'm going to have an aside here.
Yeah.
The pipes, are they generic to Scotland or Ireland? Where were they started?
I'll probably defer to Dave, but as Dave's maybe getting the microphone ready, I would say that pipes are found in cultures all over the world.
Okay.
You'll find them in Irish culture, and Northumberland has pipes in various of the European countries. But the best ones are the Highland Pipes of Scotland, which is what Dave is playing.
That's what we definitely tell people. They were popularized around the world, actually in the back of the army, taking the bagpipers all over. But the bagpipes, they say, there's still a lot of debate and argument about this, but they probably started in the Middle East and migrated across Europe.
Okay.
And you'll find various forms of the instrument all the way from the Middle East right across. We just made them a little bit louder and prouder. So I think we have one of the better, more recognizable versions, being the Great Highland Bagpipe.
And people look forward to that. I guess you have to have a certain ear for it or appreciation for the type of music. But I think it inspires you. And I don't want to get to the second day, because we'll get to that, because that's inspirational. But just hearing the bagpipes, you know, whether it's at a wedding. And I mentioned a little earlier, of course, Davey was at my daughter Shannon's wedding, and it was very inspirational as she was walking out of the church. Or it's at a funeral, which we celebrate the life of people who we've enjoyed spending time with. To me, it gives me goosebumps to hear it. It really does.
It does.
It's just an inspirational instrument.
It really is, you know? Yeah, it was, as Dave said, the pipes were maybe invented or developed elsewhere, but I would say they were perfected in Scotland.
Absolutely. I'm sure you would. So Friday we have the Highland Dance Competition.
We do have the Highland Dance Competition. Lots of kind of the rhythms of the dancers who perform these very intricate moves, which have their traditions in military, as many of the things you'll find at the Highland Games do. You'll have, of course, the beer and the whiskey tents will be open, and we'll feature some wonderful whiskeys. Incidentally, on Saturday, for the first time, we're going to run a whiskey trolley sponsored by Aberlour Whiskey from the Duke of Perth, Chicago's only Scottish pub.
Okay, Duke of Perth, right.
Out to the Highland Games, so you can be there in time for the mass bands and so on.
Beautiful. And I'm going to underline this a couple times as we're talking. A great family weekend.
Yes, indeed.
A great family weekend. Yeah. Everybody should come out.
Absolutely.
A destination for the weekend.
It is. It's the thing about the festival is, I walk around and really my job is just to smile, make people smile, make them feel the connection to family and home and so on. And the most wonderful thing is when I see a grandfather and his grandson or granddaughter holding hands, looking at each other, smiling. You can have this sense that there is a tradition, there is a sense of identity being transmitted from one generation to the next. And after all, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants, as you say. This is exactly the purpose of our society and our Highland Games, the transmission from one generation.
You want that legacy of nationality to keep on.
Exactly.
Pass it on from one generation to the other. I think that's sometimes where there's this, they skip that importance of that.
It's
whether it's Italian, whether it's Irish, whether it's Scottish, whether it's German, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, remember who you are. You know, you remember the musical The Lion King. The father says to Simba, remember who you are. And I think that's where we lose. When we try to be somebody or something we're not, we fail miserably.
Yeah.
Remember who you are. Don't try to be something you're not. Do what you do. Do it well to the best of your ability, and you'll succeed.
Yeah, you'll be happy.
And like doing it.
Yeah, you'll be happy. Also on the Friday, we have some rock music. We have some wonderful bands, both are nationally known, some Celtic and Scottish rock bands from a band called The Rogues, the American Rogues. But we also have some local acts performing, John Langford and Robbie Fulks, who are wonderful musicians. They're based here in Chicago.
Yeah,
The two of them took a tour over to Scotland and performed some great tunes. They made a film of their experience over there, and I think they recorded a couple of tracks. So we thought it'd be great to have them there with a local interest to tell their link to Scotland
and their
experience over there.
Yeah.
But the highlight, I'm sure, he says with all modesty, will be this band called John Ballantyne's Crazy Heart.
What is that?
That's a man from Scotland who plays honky-tonk music.
Oh, really?
And John Ballantyne's a friend of mine, but his bass player is very, very good-looking. Yes, indeed.
He's the bass player?
Yeah, we play.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah,
people would come just for that, right, Dave?
John and I decided what's the most logical thing two Scotsmen in Chicago can do, and it was to form a honky tonk band.
Natural,
of makes
course.
Sense.
That'd
to
be
us.
My guess.
It's true, you know, the music of Scotland, the traditions of fiddle, you know, the kind of the music of community where people get together and you know, play with this kind of improvisational mm-hmm. kind of abandon yeah. That you see with fiddles and so on, traveled across the Atlantic and through the Appalachians, became bluegrass music. And when that met the blues and the kind of rhythm and soul music, mm-hmm. it became rock and roll. But bluegrass and country music are so incredibly closely related, mm-hmm. as we know. So like we claim, we Scots claim that we perfected the bagpipes, we'll claim that we invented almost anything. And certainly country music, I feel
and
like
discovered America, too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. There's a book that was written by a man called Arthur Herman. And it has the title, How the Scots Invented the Modern World. And if that's not enough, there's a subtitle that says, How the Scots Invented the Modern World and Everything in It. Now, if you go and buy that book over in Scotland, it's got a different title. And I think this speaks to the character of Scots very powerfully, that over here, it's almost a duty to be proud and talk about the contributions of your people or your community mm-hmm. or your colleagues. But in Scotland, there's this kind of sense that you must not be too proud, you must not toot your own trumpet too much. Mm-hmm. And they thought that that was a bit too braggadocious to mm-hmm. have that title. Mm-hmm. So they changed it to more demurely, the Scottish Enlightenment. That's what the same book is called. It's interesting.
Well, that's good. So we got to remember John Ballantyne's Crazy Heart.
There you go.
Band, that's right. That's going to be Friday night. That's terrific. And then on Saturday, of course, we have the heavy athletics competition.
We do. We've had the wonderful experience of having two guys who've run this competition for us for years, Jeff Armstrong and Kevin Neese. And Jeff and Kevin, between them, have brought in some of the, literally, the world champion heavy athletes. These guys are incredible, incredible sportsmen and athletes. They're not only strong, you have to be strong to toss those cabers.
Cabers, like which is a telephone pole.
A telephone pole, yeah. Right. End over end. You have to be strong to even lift a bale of hay. Mm-hmm. You know, they take a pitchfork and throw a bale of hay over what looks like a pole vaulting mm-hmm. Bar. I tried to simply lift it up. Kevin said, can you just shift that over there for me, Gus? And I couldn't even move it, really? Never mind throw really? It. So these guys are strong, but they're also very balanced. Mm-hmm. Their sense of timing is incredible.
Sure.
They're you know, you have to be really graceful. If you can imagine that, as well as strong mm-hmm. and feats of strength and balance and timing. Yeah. So the heaviest athletics is really the core of any Highland Games. It was the first thing that was those are the Highland Games, mm-hmm. if you like. And they started when a king in Scotland called King Malcolm summoned his subjects and set them on tasks to very practical tasks like go and run up to the top of the mountain and back again. And that the person who did it the fastest became the royal messenger. You know, so it was very practical.
Function and form.
Right. So those, if you go to any Highland Games, you'll find at the core, the center, the heavy athletics. But, of course, games have now grown all over Scotland. You have bagpiping. You have dancing. You have rugby. You have football, soccer. You have the food of Scotland. Mm-hmm. You have, as you mentioned, the dogs of Scotland, and not only the dogs, the horses. Mm-hmm. We have sheep, we have Highland cows, mm-hmm. we have the great food of Scotland, of course, being the chieftain of the pudding race, as we call it, the haggis. We have a company that comes up and serves peat smoked haggis, if you can imagine such a thing. It's delicious. There's a kids area. As you mentioned, this is a wonderful family event.
Right.
And We welcome everybody who is Scottish by birth, by heritage, or simply by inclination.
I love it, yeah.
So if you're interested in any of these things, if you're interested in golf, if you're interested in the history of Scotland, there is something for you at the Highland Games. There are vendors who come from all over the country selling music, selling food, selling clothes, selling jewelry. You can do your own genealogical research with the families and clans of Scotland who are all represented. This year we have the clan chieftain of the Hay clan coming over, and he will accept the honour of being the honoured clan during the mm-hmm. Parade of clans and so on. It's a great thing for us to have a chieftain over here. But I think the big news that I have, and this is I haven't told this to anyone.
We have an exclusive here.
We do. Whereas in Scotland there is a town that appears once in a while. You'll have heard of it called Brigadoon.
Oh, very much so.
It comes through the mist.
Great musical.
There we go. Right. Well, we have one of those in Illinois. And it appears once a year on Father's Day weekend. And officially, by decree, there was a proclamation signed just on Tuesday this week by Mayor Prynn of the village of Itasca that for the duration of the festival, the town will be renamed as Itasca. So this town appears and becomes Scottish.
Isn't that great? It is a great piece of marketing
by the city.
I love it. You know, that's very true. And one of my favorite musicals, by the way, Brigadoon was just terrific.
Isn't it great?
Oh, Gene Kelly and Sid, just a great musical. The mission of the St. Andrew Society is to nourish the Scottish identity in Illinois by serving the community of the Scots, the families, and the friends, and by celebrating both traditional and contemporary Scottish culture. What I always get inspired by is the end of the program, the end of the 2 days, and we just touched upon this a little earlier.
Yeah.
When, and I'm going to let you talk about this because you can explain it certainly better than I, when the pipes come together. Gus, right. Tell us about that.
Well, throughout the festival, there'll be lots of competitions and contests, both in dancing, in the heavy athletics, and certainly in the piping community. All the bands, the soloists, the pipers, the drummers, they're all there to compete, but they're all there to collaborate also. And at the end of the competitions, they will come together, as you say, on the field. And this year, there will be 32 bands. It's going to be an incredible experience. And they will march together and they will play together. And the experience of being there and hearing particularly Amazing Grace, but there are also lots of wonderful tunes and marches that they will perform. But Amazing Grace, as you say, we've all been affected at various points in our lives by loss and remembrance. We want to remember those who went before us. And Amazing Grace has become symbolic of that remembrance. So at some point during this closing ceremonies of the mass bands, there will be a lone bagpiper or one of those piping sections from one of those bands will begin to play Amazing Grace, and they'll play the first verse. And at the end of that, there will be a moment where all the drummers will do a roll and a skirl of bagpipes, and all of the 32 bands will perform together. And the sound, the sight is awesome. And the word awesome is perhaps overused, but it is perfect for this moment. It's overwhelming, this huge noise and the sight of all these bagpipers coming together to remember those that they and we have lost. I consistently find, you know, literally the hairs on the back of my neck and my arms will stand up. Sure. And tears will kind of well in my eyes and run down my cheeks. And it's the moment where families come together and hands are held and squeezed a little tighter. And then, of course, after that, the prizes are given out and we all go off and we raise a glass of something that we enjoy to remember those and to celebrate the times to come when we're with friends and family.
Sure.
And it's just the pinnacle of the whole games where everything comes together.
You know, it's always fun to talk about. It's always fun to be there. Certainly, it's fun to be part of such a great group of people. And it's, again, I said this before, it's both an honor and a pleasure to have
Thank you, Kevin.
On the show to talk about this.
You're a good friend.
Oh, that's your dear friend. The largest Scottish cultural organization in North America, the Chicago Scots, is back for the 31st year to provide entertainment and Scottish culture with a modern twist with their annual Scottish Festival and Highland Games, taking place Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Hamilton Lakes, 1 Pierce Place in Itasca. The beloved summer celebration, the largest festival of its kind in the Midwest, will feature an extravaganza of activities and attractions from the caber toss to the Highland dance to the Dogs of Scotland. Proceeds from the festival benefit Chicago Scots' two principal charities, the Scottish Home, a haven of expert elder care deeply informed by a century of experience, and the New Caledonian House,
This family-friendly event is a chance to explore Scottish culture without having to buy a plane ticket. Enjoy good music, good food, and a great cause. And in the studio with us right now is our good pal, Angus Noble, the president of the Chicago Scots, Davy Johnson, the bagpiper of Chicago Bagpiping, Sarah from Heron Agency. Gus, information or phone numbers people would like to contact the Chicago Scots?
If you go to chicagoscots.org, O-R-G, you can find us online. If you're interested particularly in the festival, it's scottishfestivalchicago.org. TheScottishHome.org has its dedicated website. You want to call us at 708-447-5092. He said, trying to remember the number for a second. It's amazing what the effect of having all these numbers programmed into your phone. You forget the actual numbers. Come and visit at the Highland Games. That's the best way to get a sense of who we are. And everyone is welcome. You know, as I said, Scottish by birth, by heritage, or by inclination. My wife has heard me say this so many times.
I enjoy it.
And we were at an event the other day, and she heard me going into this when I was describing the society to somebody. And I said, the society is for everyone who's Scottish by birth, by heritage. And she jumped into the conversation and said, or in my case, by mistake. We welcome everyone. You know, it's a great festival to come and be part of.
And a great way to start the
Father's Day weekend. I'm so proud of
everyone. Absolutely, absolutely. Sarah, thank you for arranging things. Our best to Noreen and certainly everybody over at the Heron Agency. You know, anything we can do, of course, on the Kevin Moore Show, we're here for you guys. And there will be a lone bagpiper on the Saturday of the Highland Games. And there's a lone bagpiper in the studio right now, I think, who will take us out of the Kevin Moore Show. Again, the 31st Annual Scottish Festival and Highland Games, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th. In the studio with us right now, Davy Johnston, Chicalba Bagpiping. For information, if you'd like to touch base with Davy, give him a call at 630-534-4964. And I will leave with our good pal, Davy Johnston. Amazing Grace, Davy Johnston, Chicago Bagpiping, Gus Noble, St. Andrew's Society, the 31st Annual Scottish Festival and Highland Games, Friday, June 16th and June 17th. Gentlemen, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Kevin. All the best.
William Shakespeare was the most remarkable storyteller that the world has ever known. Homer told of adventure and men at war. Sophocles and Tolstoy told of tragedies and of people in trouble. Terence and Mark Twain told comic stories, Dickens told melodramatic ones, Plutarch told histories, and Hans Christian Andersen told fairy tales. But Shakespeare told every kind of story, comedy, tragedy, history, melodrama, adventure, love stories, and fairy tales, and each of them so well that they have become immortal. In all the world of storytelling, his is the greatest name. Chicago Shakespeare Theater brings to the stage one of the most popular romantic films of all time, Shakespeare in Love, in an enchanting, music-filled theatrical event staged by acclaimed director Rachel Rockwell. Based on the Academy Award winner for Best Picture with screenplay by Mark Norman and Tom Stoppard, Shakespeare in Love is adapted for the stage by Tony and Olivier Award winner Lee Hall. Culminating the theater's 30th anniversary season, this high-spirited romantic comedy is magnificently rendered on stage the magical intimacy of Chicago's Shakespeare's Courtyard Theater. Young playwright Will Shakespeare is stuck. He is overdue in finishing his latest play, a half-baked mess of a comedy called Romeo and Ethel, the Pirate's Daughter. He finds a muse in Viola de Lesseps, a clever beauty who will do anything, even disguise herself as a man, to audition for the stage where no women are permitted to perform. Backstage antics meet onstage drama surrounded by familiar players, including Queen Elizabeth herself. Will and Viola's passionate forbidden love affair goes on to inspire Shakespeare's masterpiece, the most romantic tragedy ever written. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning Broadway performer who has appeared in Bartlett Sher's Fiddler on the Roof and in The Glass Menagerie. We've enjoyed Nick's work on TV in the series Gotham and Girls and on the big screen in the groundbreaking film I Am Michael with Zach Quinto and Emma Roberts. Proud graduate of Carnegie Mellon University and now making his Chicago Theater debut in the lead role of Will Shakespeare, the Chicago Shakespeare Theater production of the Academy Award-winning film Shakespeare in Love, now playing at Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier, Mr. Nick Rehberger. Nick, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nick, I have had Academy Award winners. I have had Tony Award winners. I've had Grammy Award winners on my show. I've had best-selling authors. I have had so many people on the show, but never. I've even had Charles Dickens' great-grandson on the show.
Wow.
But it is an honor to have on Will Shakespeare for the first time.
Well, trust me, I'm just as honored.
You know, it's what a great play. I hope you're enjoying it as much as the audience is, because we loved it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thanks for saying that. That means a lot. But yeah, it's been an incredible process. It's a fun show. It's a really great group of people and a great theater. So it's as much fun, I think, as it looks.
Well, you know, Barbara Gaines does a great job, and as does Chris and the whole group over at Chicago Shakespeare, and I think you're probably loving the experience there. What a venue to be on the stage for, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the theater we're in is truly remarkable. I've never worked in a courtyard theater like that before, where the audience literally surrounds you. You feel like you're in the Globe Theater in London. And on top of that, they're building the new theater, the Yard.
Right.
Huge and exciting and opening soon, which is, it's cool to be here at that time.
Are you having fun portraying Will? Have you done Shakespeare before?
Oh, yeah. I've done some Shakespeare before. I've never played Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. It is a great deal of fun, because right. Not only do we get to say Shakespeare's text in the show in the form of Romeo and Juliet and some other things, but also the rest of it is Tom Stoppard, Mark Norman, and Lee Hall, who are all incredible playwrights in their own right. So the writing of the play is just so strong from Stoppard to Shakespeare that every word we get to say is remarkable and really fun.
Did you watch the movie a couple times before you began the rehearsals?
You know, I did. I saw it a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of waited because I wanted to get an idea of what we were all doing as a cast and what the director had in mind before I got anything in my head from the movie. And then once we had done a couple weeks of rehearsal, I did watch it again. And mm-hmm. I found it to be really helpful because it's such a gorgeous movie and it's so well done and it's so much fun that it kind of just added another little level of to what we were already doing.
There are so many great performers in the movie, and some of the people that you surround yourself with or that have been surrounded you with over there on the stage, like Larry Yando, I mean, you got some great people working with you.
Oh, yeah. It's an honor to share the stage with them, because we have some true Chicago pros on stage, people that I've seen before, heard of, and it's pretty cool to be on stage with them.
Now, of course, you studied at Carnegie Mellon. Was your emphasis on musical theater, or did you have a spectrum of all types of performance?
It was a spectrum of all. I was specifically in the musical theater option, but luckily at Carnegie Mellon, it's all sort of the same program. We were in the same classes as the acting majors, so we would do a semester of Shakespeare, a semester of classic American plays, and semester of Stoppard-type plays and things like that. So we kind of ran the gamut in terms of all sorts of playwriting and musical theater and everything in the program, which I felt very lucky to go there. It was a great experience.
What was the process about you getting chosen to perform as Will in Shakespeare in Love at Chicago Shakespeare Theater?
Well, it was pretty exciting because Rachel Rockwell, the director, kind of split her time between Chicago and New York. She's directed shows that have started in New York and come here and vice versa, and things that have been all over the place. So she knows a lot of people in both areas. So I was pretty lucky that I got to be seen by her for the show when she was coming through New York. where I'm based. So I had to do a lot of work for that. I did a lot of scenes from the show, a lot of running around, a lot of Shakespeare, and a little bit of singing. And it worked out really well. It's such a great part, and it seemed like a good fit. And I felt lucky to be in front of the great casting team that is based out of Chicago with Rachel.
Now, you had, of course, experience being on Broadway in Bart Scheer's Fiddler on the Roof. Who was Tevye in that production?
Danny Burstein, who's a 16-time Broadway guy, six-time Tony Award nominee. He was just truly fantastic to work with. It's like, you know, a lot of people in this place, just like when you have these veteran actors who really have such a rich history in the field and really know what they're doing, to get to work with and watch them is quite an honor, and I definitely felt that way with Danny.
You know, you look at some of these great historical and classical musicals of the American theater, Fiddler on the Roof being one, even enjoying Shakespeare in Love. You know, when you see them on TV or you see them on the stage, even as many times as you've seen them, Nick, you can't pull your eyes away from them. You just have to continue to be participatory in them. I know as Fiddler on the Roof comes on TV, and as many times as I've seen it, probably know the dialogue, you just can't turn it off. You just want to keep watching it.
Yeah, exactly. And on Broadway, it's been revived pretty much every 10 years, you know, since it started in 1964. So it's pretty cool to be a part of something like that that has such a rich history, where people coming to see the show had seen the original, or they brought their, you know, 10, 12-year-old kids who had never seen it before and have that new experience of it. So we had great audiences for that, which actually is very similar here. They have such an amazing educational program at Chicago Shakespeare Theater where they bring in high school students from all over the place to see the show. So we have anywhere from people who have seen shows at Chicago Shakespeare for the last 20-so years to kids who are seeing their very first performance on stage. So I feel very grateful to be a part of a theater that has such a great audience base like that.
And that's got to be gratifying for you too, Nick, because you were that young person not too long ago sitting in the audience saying, geez, someday I hope I'm on the stage. And you're there now able to share your talents, your unique talents with them, and showing them on how you do what you do, because someday they'll be doing the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it's been a really special part of this because, when I was a kid, my theater teacher, my English teacher took me to see shows at the Stratford Festival up in Canada or all over Michigan where I'm originally from. And those were some of the experiences that really formed me and made me want to do this as a career. And so hopefully I try to remind myself every night that I'm doing the show that there might be one or two kids out there who have that same experience for the first time, and that's very exciting and special.
And you might be doing this, your 15th show or 20th show or 25th show or whatever the presentation is, but, you know, you can't mail it in. You have to be as exuberant and enthusiastic as you've ever been because, like you say, that person is in there maybe for the first time, that young person seeing that. They want that enthusiasm on the stage that you're going to be able to share with them.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it is for me. That's what I remind myself. And now I think we're up to maybe 80 performances, and it still feels very fresh and exciting. And especially, like I said, the way the theater is set up. I mean, the audience is right there in your face, and you kind of can't help but have the audience be a part of your acting experience, which is unusual. And so feeling the audience right there with you reminds you that you can't ever phone it in, because these 500 people have come for that very first time and are seeing the show for that very first time. And it makes it exciting every time for me.
I'm reminded of a quote by Stella Adler, the great acting teacher, and she said, "Life will beat you down and crush your soul, but theater and art and music will remind you that you have one."
Wow, I love that.
Isn't that true?
Absolutely.
Very true,
yeah.
Very true.
It's really true. Yeah, and I think that's part of, you know, why I love theater so much and why I love acting and why I love sharing it with young people especially, but with everyone. And this show is so great because it's really very funny. I mean, there are moments which are pretty broad comedy, but then it has everything from very subtle humor to some pretty serious, almost tragic moments. And so to kind of lift up through those different feelings of the show, I think it's a special show to be a part of for that reason too.
Is this going to be a regular thing, and to be coming back to Chicago to join us more often?
I would love to. I love it here. Like I said, I'm from Michigan originally, so you know, I love New York. It's nothing against New York, but there's just a feeling here, a little bit more of a Midwestern kindness that I really appreciate. You can walk down the street and smile at people, and you know, all these great people who work at the theater, like we said, like Larry and Ron Raines, and all these people who are these pros who have this rich experience, and they just welcome you right into the community. So I've been really, really grateful for that. And yes, I would love to come back.
Well, we would welcome you back. We hope we have been welcoming to you now, and we certainly love to see you back. What's next up for Nick Rehberger?
Next up for me is to finish this great show, and then I think take a little break, see my family, and then head back to New York and see what comes. It's that crazy, like we've been talking about, that crazy actor's experience. You never really know what's coming next, and it's always exciting and different, and you know, so hopefully there's something new on the horizon. But I'm looking forward to discovering what that is.
Well, thank you for sharing your unique talents with us here. We've enjoyed certainly your time here in Shakespeare in Love. Chicago Shakespeare Theater brings to the stage one of the most popular romantic films of all time, Shakespeare in Love, in an enchanting, music-filled theatrical event staged by acclaimed director Rachel Rockwell. Based on the Academy Award winner for Best Picture with screenplay by Mark Norman and Tom Stoppard, Shakespeare in Love is adapted for the stage by Tony and Olivier Award winner Lee Hall. Culminating the theater's 30th anniversary season, this high-spirited romantic comedy is magnificently rendered on stage in the magical intimacy of Chicago Shakespeare's Courtyard Theater. On the line with us right now is Nick Rehberger, who portrays Will Shakespeare. Now I can say I had Will Shakespeare on my show. I'm very happy about that. That's terrific. If people would like to get some information, of course, to go to Chicago Shakespeare, the number is 312-595-5600. Nick, enjoy the rest of your time here in Chicago, and come back and visit us soon, will you?
Thank you so much. It's been so great to be here and so great to talk to you.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, my pal. Nick Rehberger, who portrays William Shakespeare in the Chicago Shakespeare Theater production, and it's a terrific production of Shakespeare in Love, now playing at Chicago Shakespeare Theater and Navy Pier. Again, a gem of Chicago that Barbara Gaines has provided for us with the new yard that's coming up there, which is going to be wonderful to enjoy. But for information, 312-595-5600. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank Gus Noble, the CEO and the president of the St. Andrews Society, presenting the 31st Annual Scottish Festival and Highland Games, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Hamilton Lakes in Itasca, located at I-290 and Thorndale Avenue. Great time. For information, 708-447-5092. And our good panel, Davy Johnston from Chicalba Bagpiping. For information, or would you like to chat with Davy, 630-534-4964. And Nick Rehberger, who portrays William Shakespeare in the Chicago Shakespeare Theater production of the Academy Award-winning film Shakespeare in Love, now playing Chicago Shakespeare Theater Navy Pier. For information, 312-595-5600. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week. And as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
If we know we're always changing, why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart each time you hear. Now or never, the more I love, the more that I'm afraid.
in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. Be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music